Today's program was brought to you by Mood Magazine, a new international quarterly publication about music and food. For more information, visit moodmusicfood.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and today we have two people in charge of a very anticipated, very exciting project about to open up here in New York on the Bowery, very close to our restaurant, Le Picho. It is the Polana Brauhaus. Before I introduce both the brewmaster and also the president and founder of the Polana Brauhaus, I do want to just have a little programming note. We if you guys have a free Sunday afternoon, October 27th, we're going to be having our annual charity event for the Epicurean Group. It's called Not My Day Job. We have over 16 restaurants participating. Green Hook Ginsmiths is providing all of the gin donated, and we have a bunch of people making great cocktails, performances. It's going to be a lot of fun. You can go to any of the websites of any of our restaurants or notmydayjob.eventbrite.com, I believe. So I'm super excited to have the folks from the Polana Brauhaus here in the house today. I know for a fact this is going to be where I'm going to be going after shift at Le Picho. We have both Rudy Tauscher, who is the president and founder of the Polana Brauhaus, and Andreas Heidenreich, who is the head brewmaster. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Joe, great to be here.
Thank you.
Very, very exciting. Both of you guys have an extraordinary amount of experience, a deep background in the industry, and a close relationship to the Polana Brewery for a long time, or even just brewing in the case of Rudy. Rudy, why don't you tell us a little bit about what? How did you come up with this? Why did you want to do this? I know you worked in hotels. You lived in New York for a long time, running some great hotels, opening up as a general manager some outstanding hotels. Why do you want to go to work in a brew house?
Joe, the reason why I did this was I grew up in a small family brewery in southern Germany, where I always enjoyed working during the holidays and when I was young. And somehow I didn't go to the brewery. I instead went to the restaurant industry, and from there on worked my way up. And in 1984 came to the United States and continued my career. And I always wanted to go back to my roots. And after being 15 years in the corporate world and in the corporate mill, decided to eventually let go, opened my own company, reached out to Paulana in Munich. We immediately struck a great chord, and several years later, we have a wonderful or great location in the Bowery, and we built a microbrewery together with the help of Paulana, and Andy is our brewmaster, and he's here with us since 3 or 4 months now.
Yeah, 3 months.
Well, welcome to New York, newly minted New Yorker.
Yeah, thank you.
hopefully, we can convince you to stay around for a while. So, when you were thinking of this idea to start a brew pub here in New York, there are so many great breweries around the world. I know that you are German, but and even within Germany, there are a ton of great breweries. Why was it Polana that you reached out to?
Paulana has a great brewing tradition going back 375 years, and Paulana does have a model of brew houses internationally, and that enticed me to speak with them. And what we're doing here in the Bowery is building the first prototype, which is ready. We're actually looking forward to have some final inspections in this afternoon, and hopefully we can start with the brew process in the next couple of days. I thought it was a great opportunity. I've been following the beer trends over the last 10, 15 years, and I've always been interested in it. And once I did my MBA program, I actually wrote a balance sheet analysis on South African breweries. I thought was a phenomenal opportunity. The trend or the trends which are coming here in the United States are going back to quality, high quality mm-hmm. beers. And you know, I have some favorites, and I have to acknowledge them. It's Brooklyn and Sam Adams, and there are others out there who Sierra Nevada who just do a fantastic job. And all of them came together somewhere in the mid to late 80s and 90s and started. And today they have fantastic operations. And I thought there's an opportunity to come back with an original beer from Germany, and that was pretty much the thought process.
Yeah. Now, Andy, you've worked with Planner since you were 16. Correct?
No, 18.
18. Oh, off by a few years. 18 years old, and you've opened up a few of these brew houses around the world.
Yes, I opened 7 breweries in Asia, in China, in Taiwan, and yeah, now it's number 8 in New York for me.
So you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
All right. When you do this, when you go and open up a new brewery, is the thought that, all right, maybe this is a place that I can stay for a while? Or is it that there's going to be a new project coming up on the horizon and I'm going to be moving on to the next one?
No, I'm a guy, I won't stay. So I stayed 5 years in Asia, mm-hmm. in China, and 4 years in Taiwan. And now I won't stay longer in New York, of course.
Now, I know you've only been here a short amount of time, but already, you've been through a few openings. What are you seeing are the big differences between the process of opening up a project in Asia and in here in New York? Where is it easier?
Easy. Asia is not easy, and New York, I found out now, is also not easy with all the paperwork and everything. But it's also a different culture, of course. It's Asian people. We have more workers to open a Palana, to construction work and everything. And yeah, goes faster in Asia, actually.
Everything happens more quickly. How about in terms of like the drinking culture in Asia?
Oh, the Asian people drink a lot. The Chinese, they drink always with big glasses, 1 liter. They drink 2 liter, 3 liter. Everything.
No problem. And wow, what a great pairing with a variety of Asian foods to have Palaner beer. It seems like that is a natural to go with it.
No, also in Palaner we serve German food in Asia.
Mm. Okay. Oh, so you have the brew pubs where
it's a microbrewery and German style with sausage, pork knuckles, everything.
And they've embraced this food right away.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. I absolutely love hearing that. So here in the States, some of those breweries that you're talking about are creating new styles of beer using all sorts of different ingredients, sometimes exotic ingredients. I know that at the original Palaner Brewery, you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, but adhere to the German purity law, right?
Where
it's just the water, the yeast, grain, hops, yeast, and hops.
Barley, yeah.
Yeah. So are you going to be, adapting to maybe some of the American taste for these kind of off-the-wall beers, or are you going to stick with that, the German purity?
No, it's a German purity law, and we make a German style of lager beer, also not so hoppy, and also a Munich dark beer, and a Hefeweizen, of course.
Okay. And those are the only 3 beers you're going to be making?
Yeah, we make also seasonal beers like Oktoberfest beer for the Oktoberfest season, for the holiday season. We make a nice Schwarzbier, called Schwarzbier, it's very dark color. And also for a spring beer, Salvator, very strong beer with 8% alcohol. Mm-hmm. And maybe also a summer beer.
Okay, so would you say that the breweries around the world in Asia and Germany here have the same beers? Or?
Yes.
All right.
Also, our standard beers is Lager beer, dark beer, and Hefeweizen. We produce this in every Palaner Brauhauses around the world, in China, Singapore, everywhere.
That's fantastic. And I like that you're sticking to that authentic purity, and you're trying to make it be as if you were actually in Munich.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So happy Oktoberfest. Do people wish each other a happy Oktoberfest, by the way?
No. You know, we had so many people come to us and say, finally, we don't have to go to Munich anymore. Now we can stay in New York and we'll celebrate with you.
That's perfect. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the history of Oktoberfest, because even as someone in the industry, I think all I really know about is that it happens in Munich. There are certain breweries that are allowed to participate, and yours being one of them. Yeah. And it's a time where people drink a lot of delicious beer out of large drinking vessels.
Yes, of course. Only you get served only with 1 liter glasses. No half liter, no pints, nothing, only 1 liter. And the Oktoberfest is the oldest beer festival in the world. So it's over 200 years old.
Yeah.
And 2010, we celebrate the 200 years anniversary. And it was the best business. The Oktoberfest sold over 7 million liter of beer.
In how long?
In 2 weeks, 14 days.
I love that. It's fantastic. And these are liters. These are steins of beer, right?
Is yes, 1 liter.
1 liter, a freaking big, and this is a stronger beer than you would normally brew.
Yes, it's over between 6% and 7% alcohol.
So, whose brilliant idea was it to serve a stronger beer in a large vessel?
Well, actually, it started 1810. There was a wedding with the Prince of Bavaria, and it starts with a big party and a horse race, and then it was a great feeling for the people in Munich, and then decides we make it every year. And then around 150 years ago, they said Oktoberfest beer have to be over 13% Stammwürze, called the sugar content.
Mm-hmm.
Not under, must be over 13%. So if, and with 13% Stammwürze, sugar content, you get between 6 and 7% alcohol. And this is the rule now.
And also
only the Munich breweries can sell the beer for the Oktoberfest. It's when you have a brewery outside from Munich, is not allowed to serve the beer at the Oktoberfest.
At the official Oktoberfest. But yeah. are there kind of mini Oktoberfests around Germany, or is it only the main?
No, it's only the main, but of course we have other beer festivals, but it's not called Oktoberfest.
Okay. Wow, this is a marketing coup. Like, this is a genius thing that people fly from all around the world.
Yeah.
But I guess when the product is so delicious and you can create such a fun atmosphere, it kind of makes a lot of sense. Now, Rudy, your family has or had a small brewery
since 1847. So still going strong.
So I shouldn't say a small historic brewery. quite old.
Yeah.
And what do they think of your new venture?
They were so happy that actually my cousins flew in last month. We had a small event getting together and just showing off of what we're doing to come over and to help celebrate, which was a great surprise.
That's fantastic. And is the beer imported to the United States, their beer?
No, we operate on a 10-15 mile radius. We consider beer a fresh product. It shouldn't be really shipped around the world. It should be consumed locally. It's made for the on-premise consumption. And I always think that beer is a great beverage because it is made like tea in its preparation, and it also has a finishing like a champagne process. So it has various production methodologies in there, which I think make it a gentle beverage.
I think, well, if you consider compared to like a hard alcohol, certainly it takes quite a few beers to equal the strength of something that's a hard liquor. But I'm with you. I love beer. Every time, at the end of a shift at work, it's usually a beer I'm going for instead of a glass of wine. That being said, we're going to take just a short break, but we'll be right back with more on the Paulaner Brauhaus on the Bowery, soon to open here in New York City, on In the Drink. We'll be right back.
What's Mood? Mood is a quarterly magazine about music and food. For its creators, not many things can beat a good record and a delicious meal. Maybe a well-written story or a gorgeous photo. Well, that's all in Mood. The magazine looks at music and food in a cohesive and unique way, with a keen eye to design and high-quality writing. Its contributors are located around the globe, and the stories span accordingly. Check it out today at moodmusicfood.com. That's moodmusicfood.com.
We're back on In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. We're here with Andreas Heidenreich, the brewmaster of the new Polana Brewhouse, and Rudy Tauscher, who's the founder and president of the Polana Brewhouse, soon to open here on the Bowery, downtown New York City. Guys, when can we expect the opening? I've been eagerly... It's on my way to work, so I've been seeing the paper in the window on a daily basis.
We are in the permit and licensing process in the hands of the New York authorities right now.
Oh, and good luck!
And they're very specific inspections. This afternoon we have one looking at our boiler installation, and then gas hookup, and then we should be able to start the brewing process. But we cannot open immediately because it takes us between 10 and 15 days to make the beer. Our beers take longer, Andy, if you want to elaborate.
Because it's a microbrewery, and mm-hmm. The aging time with the Hefeweizen is a faster beer because it's fermented by warmer temperatures, so it's only 10 to 12 days. But the lager beer and dark beer go need 20 days around.
In 20 days. And those are being aged in stainless steel?
Stainless steel tanks. Mm-hmm. We have a capacity of 17,000 liters. So
what happens during that aging time physically to the beer? Between, if you were to taste it after it's been brewed, when you first put it into the tank, and then towards the end, how is it evolving in the tank?
At first, we add the yeast. And the yeast converts the sugar to alcohol and CO2 in the tank. Mm-hmm. And this needs time because, what I said before, the sugar content, around 12%, and they have to convert, so need around 20 days.
Need around 20 days for
aging, cold aging.
Okay, yeah. But this is really the second fermentation time that's happening.
The aging time is the second fermentation. The main fermentation is around only 3 to 4 days.
Okay, so that's pretty quick. And then have you been able to do a lot of menu testing already, or?
I've been here in New York and, mm-hmm. and been in the U.S. since 84 and looked at the various food scenes and developments. And I think that what is happening in the United States is really exciting. I started off with in Texas, in Dallas, with Southwestern food, went to Louisiana, Cajun food, and then came up here to the eastern, the northeastern states. In New York, I like the development of what we have right now, farm to table. I think this is really incredible because it's fresh and it supports the local economy, and it there's a lot of creativity.
So are you going to be utilizing some of these local farms in the restaurant?
Our food concept is very much designed to have the food here in the tri-state area. Mm-hmm. And we say we are globally inspired, but we want to produce locally. And we believe that because the beer is locally produced, will not sell off-premise. Everything is going to be in the restaurant and in the microbrewery.
Well, so tell us a little bit about some of the actual items. Are you going to have those big kind of pork knuckles and schnitzels? What's going to be on the menu?
We do have schnitzels, but we have also looked at some fun items. We looked at some traditional things like cabbage or kraut, and we discovered that cabbage is actually available in almost every culture. So you'll find eventually, you know, sausages, and you can have some kimchi or Texas coleslaw or Bavarian kraut salad, you know, and then you can marry that with your sausages. And then we have more traditional dishes. We have a great potato soup with spring onions and with radishes in the coriander butter and smoked salmon and There will be one day herring in sour cream. Very traditional dishes, very comfort-like dishes. People just can come there, you know, have a bite to eat, have a great beer. Mm-hmm. And we want to design it and develop it where you can come 2-3 times a week without getting tired after food.
So no knuckles, is
right. the knuckles we haven't decided, we haven't gone there not yet, because we have to see how the cooking process is coming on, and you know how strong the kitchen is, but potentially, yes.
Oh, that would be exciting. I don't think I've actually seen that dish in the States. It's kind of, you have to pick it up with your hands and just sort of go at it.
It does have its characteristics.
It's not the most elegant dish, but pretty tasty, especially when it's colder out. That's super exciting. How many seats is the restaurant going to be? How big is it?
We can seat up to about 220. Mm. It's fairly large space. We've designed it in two parts. One side is with more the communal part, where there's the bar and where the fermentation or the dispensing tanks are, and you can just stand there or sit. And then on the other side, there is a restaurant, and it has both areas. One area is designed with polished concrete floor, and mm-hmm. the other one is with oak floors. And great design. We took a building, or we were able to get the building that goes back to the 1880s, and it used to be formerly Sammy's Bowery Follies, a very social hotspot in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. And I've actually been contacted by some of the people. The other day I got a call from a gentleman. He said his mother actually entertained as a singer at Sammy's Bowery Follies in the 50s. And so there's
history in the spot. There's history in the brewery going back to the 1600s. Mm-hmm. I think that's all good. You know, it's good juju, as we say. It has good energy that's bringing that along. And now, what have you brought from your time at the running hotels? What have you learned most, do you think, that's been most useful for you in this process of opening a brew pub?
It's actually quite a different track I'm on now. I used to have a great corporate support. There was always legal, and there was human resource, and there was operations, and now it's all in my own hands. But I'm familiar with the processes, and I can structure it, and I'm putting a team together that will help me, or to help us, to be successful. And it's just a smaller venue, mm-hmm. and it takes a lot of attention to detail. But we do have to opportunity that, if this go well, hopefully, that we can duplicate the model. We could go into other cities in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that's missing from, at least from New York right now, is to have a great brew pub. There's really not much of that going on. And many cities, you know, don't have it. A few cities do, right? Like, you can go to maybe Boulder, Colorado, and see some really interesting brew pubs there. But you don't see it enough here, and I wish there was more of that.
There is it's very difficult to hit both directions. You have to have an excellent beer, and you have to have great food. And very often the concept struggles, because they either have a great beer or they have great food. Bringing the two together is vital. And we've looked at it, you know, the great brew pubs, which go back to Paris and Strasbourg and Munich 100 years ago, mm-hmm. like the brasseries of what you have. There are still some left over in Munich and in Paris. They become social hotspots, or they're very bohemian. And beer somehow has the ability to cross the social structure. So it's okay to stand next to the mayor of a city and share a beer, even if you are not, you know, his assistant, and you're just, you know, off the street. And there's no obligation. You just can then move on and say, hey, I saw the mayor. He had a beer. And beer somehow, you know, brings people together.
Yeah, there's something that is very convivial about beer. I completely agree with that. One of my best friends is a German who works for the BBC America, and we met because I was his RA, and his name is Franz Strasser, and he grew up by Heidelberg down mm-hmm. in the south, mm-hmm. and we met because we were on the floor, and and we shared a beer. And I had this book, Michael Jackson's Book of Beers, and I knew about half of the American beers, and he knew about two-thirds of the German beers, and I didn't know any of the German beers, and he knew any of the American beers. And we would go through and try to get beers and then look at them in the book and research them. And now he's one of my very, very best friends, all because of beer, and I think about that. Anyway, sorry to digress for a moment, but Franz, I hope you're listening. If not, I'm sending you this. This interview. Going back to you, Andreas, can you tell us a little bit about what your brewing cycle is going to be? How many days are you going to be brewing? How much at a time? How does that work, and how do you kind of gauge that for the restaurant?
Yeah. I think we brew 4 to 6 times per week. This is 6,000 liter per week, and per month we want to sell around 20,000 liter.
You're gonna sell around 20,000 liter. Yeah. Now, and you can't sell any of that beer off site, right?
No, it's only for the restaurant. It's a microbrewery, and I have to say this beer is also special because it's unfiltered. So all the vitamins is still in the beer. The yeast is cloudy, so it's actually a special beer.
Yeah, you say it's special because it's not done like this in other parts of the world, or
no,
or just compared to other
many microbreweries make this because yes. We have no filters, and that's why. Also in Asia, also the local microbreweries will do this.
Would you say that unfiltered beers are more flavorful as well as perhaps more nutritious?
Yes. So yeah. Because all the vitamins and minerals are still inside, so. It's also healthy.
It's also healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's hydrating, right? Beer is mostly water.
Over 90% water, yeah.
90% water, vitamins, minerals, nutrients. I'm going to have it for breakfast.
Yeah.
I definitely think that you could see a correlation with wines as well, with that lack of filtering. At least the wines that are gentle with their filtering or don't do it all tend to be more expressive to me, because you're leaving more of that in it. And I guess you choose not to filter because it doesn't need to be as stable.
Yes, that's why.
Yeah. So if you're exporting it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're going to export a beer, you're going to keg it and export it to the other side of the world, then you do need to filter everything
out. Yes, of course, yeah.
Okay, right. But then if you're on site and you're consuming it right where it's brewed.
Because our beer will be only in the tank maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then already sold.
Wow. So what do you envision, what do you guys envision as a night at the Polana Brewhouse being like? How do you envision people to go and enjoy it? Is it people stopping by for a beer and a little bite, a whole dinner with friends? Are people going to be going for? Are you going to do breakfast and brunch with the pretzel and the vice versa and all of that? Because I love that.
We opening first in the evening until we have the strides and understand the characteristic of the operation. And then we're going to pull it down to brunch Saturday and Sunday. And then we're going to, from there, and develop the lunch concept and then potentially bring it up to breakfast. Yes, you can come to us and have a brewmaster breakfast, you know, scrambled eggs and sausages, fresh pretzels, and just have that concept developed. The way how we envision it is, you just stop by either in the beginning of the evening or the middle of the evening or the end of the evening. We're bringing a concept also. It's a curry sausage. Yeah, I'm not really sure if you're familiar with
currywurst from Berlin.
Yes,
exactly. Franz and I eat so much currywurst.
There's a cult out there.
In your hand, right?
Yes, yeah.
You have to hold it in your hand. You have a little fork and it's like ketchup with curry spice and seasoning.
And French rice and
pommes.
Pommes. Yeah. That's
yes.
Correct. You're on it.
So, ein Currywurst und Pommes, bitte.
And what we do, and what we have is, we also have a New York hot dog. Yeah. So
that's hilarious. That's fun.
So you can actually choose. You know, do you want to stay in the American spirit or go more the Berlin or the German way?
And I remember going to Berlin and being blown away by how awesome of a city it was, but just thinking that this is a baffling experience to be eating something with the curry spices in Berlin on a bratwurst with French fries. Like, how is this making any sense? But it is one of the most delicious things. But it's one of those afternoon snack, or you've been out drinking a lot and it's like end of the night, like I need something to soak up all the poison.
Mm-hmm. That's and there are real hot spots in Berlin where people meet 1 or 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and just have a curry sausage.
Oh man, that is great. That brings me back. Guys, thank you so much for being on In the Drink. This has been a joy. And now I'm even more excited. You better open up quick because I'm going to be pounding on the door.
We'll be looking for you, Joe. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah. And guys, when they open up in a few weeks, please do go visit the Polana Brauhaus down on Bowery, just south of Houston. I'm confident this is going to be a great addition to the New York dining scene. So thank you so much for listening. Hope to see you at Not My Day Job on October 27th. I'm Joe Campanelli. This has been In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.